the environment that we hope to create would be a living situation where you could just, as you said, hang out so that this it would happen naturally.
Yeah.
Not structured so that
you... Yeah, the fewer structures you have, the more
fun it
is.
Well, that determines the answer anyway.
Yeah.
If you structure it too precisely.
Then you get exactly what you thought you'd get.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you don't learn anything. I really like to go in each situation as wide open as the situation allows. I mean, there are certain limitations by money or time or opportunity or stuff like that. But why impose more of them by unnecessarily?
Mm-hmm.
I used to get caught in living out my thoughts of yesterday. Of, you know, like you create a foundation and you have an idea and then somebody runs with it and pretty soon you're carrying this big thing around with you, supporting this old idea you had that you're not even interested in particularly anymore. And I just kept dumping and dumping. I really understood the way my guru just kind of walked off into the woods and just kept walking away from everything. When he was there, he was really there, but he didn't allow it to grab like that. You know.
Well, I just want to swim with them and do that. And I'm, you know, running this foundation as chairperson. And
I think that honesty of I just want to swim with them, and I bet you do too, and come join me in this foundation, and let's create this beautiful space and see what comes out of it. I think some way like that captures the, touches people in a way. A lot of people feel they need to be doing something important, which is part of it. But I'm not sure that that's not a limiting condition.
Mm. Well, I'm inviting you all to come and play with us in Mexico in the future.
That's quite an invitation, by the way, I'll tell you. Because I can't tell you how many people come up and say, do you think there's a chance I could do it?
Yeah.
And I think if you just create an opportunity for any human being that really wants to open themselves through this dialogue, knowing, as Tony told me when I danced with the dolphins, she says, they may throw you out immediately. You've got to be ready for it. So if your ego's brittle, watch it. But if you're ready to play, come on in and put some bread in, put some time in, come on down.
Well, they're coming in all over the world. There are places like Monkey Maya where they're coming in. They've been coming in for the last 10 years. So they are really trying to make contact. It's the all the limitations seem to be on the human side, not the dolphin.
Yeah. Well, we don't spend much time in our aquatic identities. Aquatic identities.
You're going to go on sort of a retreat next year?
Well, I'm just stopping what I'm doing.
Stopping. Mexico might be the place.
Well, I'm spending the winter in a farm in western Massachusetts working on a book and taking care of a cow named Viola, who is a pet. She's old, and she takes walks with you, and you feed her every day.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to do that this winter and play my cello. And
I didn't know you played the cello.
Yeah, and I play in quartets and stuff like that.
Do you?
Yeah.
And there's probably, so many sides to you.
Oh, infinite. And that's going to go to May, and then I'm going to do some anti-nuclear stuff along the way. And maybe get arrested if it's appropriate, if I can find a good place to get arrested. And then late in the summer I'm going to India because it's the 10th anniversary of when my guru left his body.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it'd be fun to check in. And then I don't know, I started studying Aikido last summer.
Oh.
And I may go to Japan for a while to study Aikido. Because every time I would study Aikido for about 3 or 4 hours, I could see the space when a really good Aikido master teaches you. They are absolutely quiet.
Oh.
And they're just taking the energies of the universe and playing with them. My teacher's teacher deals with people coming at him so that they never get to touch him at all.
Mm-hmm.
And he always just moves their energy. He takes their mind and moves them in any way. And I saw that it's just getting in harmony with what is. It's getting yourself out of the way.
You know, many years ago when I was going to art school, I went to the first dojo in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And I was so impressed with what Aikido represented that I felt that it should be incorporated into the curriculum at art school.
Right.
And so here I brought my teacher to, I was going to Art Center then, and naturally everybody saw the relationship to how you draw and paint.
Of course.
When it comes from the key, or whether it's coming from a tight wrist.
Yeah.
And it was very natural.
Before I got thrown out of Harvard, I was in the School of Education at Harvard also, one of my joint appointments. And I was doing a project at the Lexington School Systems in junior high school. I brought my Aikido teachers, I was studying karate then, mm-hmm. brought my karate teachers in, and we divided the men so that half of them were doing baseball and football and stuff, and half of them were studying karate. Mm-hmm. And we were checking their grades and all kinds of things. Because in order to do karate well, or any of the Eastern interim martial arts, you have to develop that quiet center. And that makes you more effective in anything you're going to do. And it's very different from a competitive sport. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, I never got the results because I got thrown out, so I assume it worked.
But you're their most famous graduate.
Well, I was a bad guy. And then I've learned that if you, you know, one to me is fame and shame. I didn't know that, but I sure learned it. I learned it. It's far out, you know, to be infamous. Mm-hmm. You know, he's the one that takes drugs, and he got thrown out of Harvard, and they said he was a liar and all kinds of things. And then just wait. Like 2 years ago, I gave an invited address at the APA, and they threw me out in 1964. And it's as if you'd sort of wait long enough, and the whole thing comes around. If you're, you see, there's fame, there's shame. Then you try loss and gain. Then when you're really hip, you try pleasure and pain. That's a big one. That's a good one. Then you're ready for life and death. Mm-hmm. Till you're right here. Pleasure. Pain. Did cancer, all that stuff, take you into any of that space?
Oh, yes.
So that you could just say, what is?
I don't hang on to it, you know.
And who does? Join the club, my love.
Well, I get glimmers of it.
Yeah.
And I get glimmers of the possibility of welcoming it, if it's to be.
Of course.
That is very peaceful.
Maharaji, my guru, at one point he was sitting there, and there were a group of people around, he said, the servant of one of his old devotees rushed in, and before he could say anything, Maharaji says, I know that so-and-so had a heart attack and he's calling for me, but I'm not going to go. And they all said, oh, go and go. And the servant said, yes, he did just have a heart attack, and they told me to come and get you because he's dying. Mm-hmm. No, and then he picked up a banana, Maharaji, and he says, here, give him this, he'll be all right. Well, in India, when a guru gives a piece of fruit, I mean, if you're a 90-year-old woman and you want to have a son, you get a mango, and 9 months later, you got it, you know. It doesn't matter if you have all your ovaries gone, nothing, doesn't matter. So they took the banana, they rush home, they mash it up, and they feed it to the guy. He takes the last bite, and he dies. Now, that's a bad story to tell about your guru, in one level. But for me, it's absolutely exquisite, because all he said was, he'll be all right. See, it depends on where you're looking from,
right.
Which way healing goes with people. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that doctors and nurses burn out a lot because they're attached to the fact that their patients shouldn't die. Mm-hmm. It's like saying fall shouldn't come, or winter shouldn't. I mean, that's absurd, you know? It's like when you pitch yourself against the Tao, of course you're going to burn out. Until you say, look, I will do my best as a healing agent. And then what happens, happens in the way of things. See, then suddenly there's peace in the way you do it. Otherwise, if you're attached to the fruits of your efforts like that, there's no way you're not going to have to close your heart down because you can't handle losing so much, because if you do lose, people do die. Mm-hmm. And doctors, it screws up their family life, their relation with their kids. I mean, it burns them out terribly. Mm-hmm. And it's something I learned in India about people doing the Dharma, or doing their way. Mm-hmm. Want to hear one beautiful story? There was this doctor who was working in the smallpox eradication program in India, and he was kind of a civil liberties kind of doctor, you know, Berkeley from the 60s type doctor. And he found himself part of that there was a village. They were down to a very few villages that still had smallpox, and what they do is they go in and they vaccinate everybody in the village. And if you didn't, somebody carrying it might go to a railway station and 500 people would get it, you know, and then it would go to 500 villages and they'd lose the whole game again. Mm-hmm. And it turned out smallpox is the only thing we've ever eradicated off the world, you know, one end of illness by human ingenuity and, and science. So there was a village in which they thought that smallpox was the gift of God and that to eradicate it was against the will of God. And they had a case of smallpox there. And Larry found himself part of a midnight raid on the city to force them to be vaccinated. I mean, because he looked at the pox and the death and the blindness, and he said, well, I'm just going to make a moral decision to override this, right? So they broke down the door of the chief's house, wrestled him to the ground, inoculated him, vaccinated him. The wife bit the doctor when they were wrestling her to the ground. The kids and all the rest of the village are around the house watching to see what's going to happen. Gets all done, there's silence. The old man, the leader, gets up. He walks out to his garden, and there's one squash in the little truck garden, and he picks the squash, and he brings it in, and he hands it to the chief doctor. Larry can't figure out what this is about. So he asks the translator, and the chief says, it was our belief that smallpox was the will of God. I did what I could to protect what I think is the Dharma. Right? It is your belief that smallpox, that vaccination is the will of God. You did your Dharma. There were many of you, there are few of us, no shame. Now you are a guest in my home. I'm sorry I don't have more to offer you.
Oh.
That's the place from which social action comes. Mm. See, that's what I've been doing in the anti-nuclear rallies. Saying to people, nuclear energy is off the wall. I mean, absolutely off the wall. It's not conscious behavior. And it's coming out of an intuitive sense in people that it's got to change, that we've got to change. And it can come from a place not of anger and not just doing your Dharma, doing mm-hmm. your thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I certainly agree with that. You're on your way to Hawaii? No?
Yeah. I'm always on my way somewhere. I'm wandering side.
And I would like to put...
Oh, our preparation for Hawaii.
Dear preparation for Hawaii. And thank you for being here.
Thank you, dear heart.
Very much.
Thank you, dear heart.
You always make me feel
this
so...
This is nice enough, a fun form to meet in, isn't it? Since you won't be going, but you'll be going in my heart.
Yeah.
La dee 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 dee, la da 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 da.
Thank you.
Thank you.